Denise. Would be agenda paper eight.
Yes.
You have 15 minutes on the agenda, Denise. Take it away.
This paper presents a draft of the tentative agenda decision of an issue that you analyzed at the September 2013 meeting regarding the accounting for the price difference between the institutional offer price and the retail offer price for shares issued in an initial public offering. In this tentative agenda decision, we conclude that this transaction is outside the scope of IFRS 2. And in addition, it reflects the conclusion that there is no price difference to account for, because the equity instruments issued by the entity and granted to the investors will be accounted for at or will be measured at the different prices paid by the investors in accordance with IFRS 32. So do you have any comments on the wording of the tentative agenda decision?
Laurent?
Yeah, I have two types of comments. I think that the agenda section could be a little bit more detailed about why we have come up to those such conclusions, such as the paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth paragraph saying the interpretation committee noted that the transaction analyzed outside the scope of IFRS 2 because the issue of the shares is not obtaining goods or services from either shareholder group. Maybe we can explain why we consider that in this specific fact pattern, we consider that there is no no service that is being provided, good acquired or services provided here. Also, the following paragraph where the interpretation committee noted that the equity instruments issued by the entity and granted to the investors should be measured at the fair value of the share issued. I'm not sure that that's how we recognize the measurement of equity instruments. I would have thought that you recognize equity instruments at the fair value of the consideration received.
Yes, you're right on that point.
So I'm afraid that this might be setting a new requirement. Then the last comment of the institution committee observed that the issue analysis is not widespread. It's also it arises only in a limited number of jurisdictions. I would not be so sure. I've seen it before, so for me it's not uncommon. It may not be very common, but it's not so limited. So I wouldn't like that the fourth paragraph I mentioned is read to say don't search first in the first place to see whether there are goods or services being provided. So we had a long debate last time, and I think not enough is reflected why we have come up with the conclusion we have come up with.
I had a question mark next to that paragraph too. But I think you're right. It's the fair value of the consideration that we want to focus people on. Okay, let's go around. I've got Scott, Tony, Reinhardt, John.
I don't have any problem with the agenda decision, although consistent with Lawrence's last note, the last paragraph about it not being widespread, I wasn't feeling confident about. I mean, I've seen this happen in the U.S. It doesn't happen much, but I have seen it happen in the U.S. So I don't think it's really true that it happens in a limited number of jurisdictions. It probably happens in a limited number of instances in most jurisdictions, but I'm not sure that paragraph is correct, and I don't think it's necessary to support our decision either. Yep.
My question would
get rid of that.
Then can we just delete the last paragraph and be happy?
That'd be good with me.
Okay. Tony?
Yeah, the agenda decision, I think, correctly reflects the conclusion that the committee came to last time round. I also wonder whether the analysis could be expanded in a couple of areas. I know that in March the committee concluded that in the context of a reverse acquisition, the service received in the context of a reverse acquisition was in fact the listing. And I wonder why the listing in this case isn't a service that's been received, because you need to do the listing, so you need to offer the differential pricing in order to achieve the listing. And then the second thing that I wondered is, if I compare it to the source of paragraph 13A, which is black economic empowerment arrangements in South Africa, I wonder why different prices to retail investors and wholesale investors is not a price differential you account for, but a price differential between advantaged groups in South African society and disadvantaged groups in South African society is one that you do account for. And my concern is that with those two inconsistencies and no explanation of why we got to this conclusion, I think it will actually probably promote diversity rather than rein it in, because we get a very specific answer for dual-priced Malaysian IPOs, and we don't get a principle that says, when am I applying 13A? I know I do it for black economic empowerment arrangements, but when else do I do it? Because I just wonder if you could refer to the literature and just explain why this is different to BEE plans, or why it's different to the reverse acquisition that we looked at in March. I understand that most people around the table, I'm probably in a very small minority, would see it differently, but I think to be helpful to our constituents, it will be helpful to explain why we got to where we got to.
But isn't the why, for better or worse, that we decided there was no good or service?
Mm-hmm.
And we decided in those other situations that there was a good or service, and isn't that kind of one that you're going to make up your mind every time on?
It is, but the listing was the good or service in the reverse acquisition in March. And that's what troubles me, because the listing could easily be the good or service here. And I know that's not the view of the committee, but I struggle to see why there's a difference. And the thing that troubles me is not so much the conclusion, because that is what it is. It's just, how will people distinguish going forward? Is it going to be a rule for each one? And that's the thing that troubles me.
I suppose because I said so isn't good enough. Doesn't work if it only is. Reinhardt or Michael, then Reinhardt.
I was just going to say, and what Tony's just described is what had led us to the staff recommendation last time, which was obviously overturned by the committee. So we'd appreciate some assistance with this one, because it wasn't where we had ended up ourselves.
The late board member privilege, and then Reinhardt.
To Tony's point, I would question whether the service is received by the existing shareholders who benefit from the listing, the IPO here, or the entity itself. I don't know. Maybe there is some element of service to the entity, but I think the most part of that service goes to favor this in of the existing investors who get the liquidity of their shares through the listing. And so it's a bit difficult to say which part belongs to which. The question, but I agree to your point that if we have this specific treatment for the black economic empowerment in Africa, where do we stop in trying to identify services received by the entity? But I think we should be careful not to push too far this idea of a service being received by the entity, because then where do you stop?
I agree completely. And it's trying to get a principle around that parameter that was behind my comment.
Reinhardt, John, and Andrew?
That was essentially going to be my comment as well, and really to expand that section to distinguish that in this fact pattern, no goods or services or no unidentifiable goods or services have been achieved, just as we talked about last time, to help enunciate that principle.
I think the key word there is identifiable.
Yeah.
That's John?
I mean, I agree with what Tony said. I don't think the agenda decision helps with how we arrive at the interpretation of 13A. And 13A says, in particular, if the identifiable consideration received, if any, by the entity appears to be less than the fair value of the equity instruments granted or liability incurred, typically this situation indicates that other consideration that is, unidentified goods or services has been or will be received. So the word typically is pretty important because it actually provides an out that you may actually have situations where that difference is not unidentifiable goods or services. But I don't think the agenda decision actually addresses why we don't think unidentifiable goods or services might exist in this situation.
Okay,
I also think it doesn't address the basis for conclusions 18C and 18D. And the second sentence of BC 18D pretty much says, if the value of the identifiable consideration received appears to be less than the fair value of the equity inference granted or liability incurred, typically this circumstance indicates the other consideration. That is, unidentifiable goods or services has been or will be received. So to me, the agenda decision has to address those requirements of 13A and the basis for conclusions. Otherwise, it just opens up the door to say, how are people supposed to determine whether there are or not unidentifiable goods or services in the arrangement?
Okay, now we're getting perilously close to saying we actually think we were wrong before and we want to have a different agenda decision, which is... No, nobody wants to do that.
To clarify my view, I don't. I was in the minority last time. I respect the decision of the committee. I just think we need to be clear about what we're saying.
Okay.
And I was in the minority last time, but the committee made a decision, but I think it needs to be, like Tony says, clear why we think this is not in the scope of 13A.
Okay. John and Tony, I'm going to ask you to help Denise to give her a sentence or two that helps her do that, because I don't know what that sentence is. So, Andrew, Laurent, Scott.
Okay, well, now you've nominated John and Tony to actually provide this clarification, perhaps my comment is is no longer relevant. I'm also providing greater clarification, but in the end we are dealing with a paragraph that refers to identifying unidentifiable goods or services, and I think it is just a judgmental issue based on a very careful analysis of facts and circumstances. I think the committee overall, when we last met, felt in these facts and circumstances, the majority judgment was that there are no goods or services. Perhaps the decision could emphasise that there is a need for judgment, but I think trying to draw a sharp and helpful distinction between this fact pattern and some of the others which Tony has mentioned, well, I think it will challenge John and Tony's drafting skills, but nonetheless, I'm sure they're up to it.
You get two sentences of no more than 17 words each. Laurent?
Well, one issue that we discussed last time was whether there was a difference in the price paid compared to the fair value of the equity instrument issued. And we have said that the fair value of the equity instrument issued might be different whether you're looking at institutional investors or whether you're looking at the retail. And this is what is missing. Because indeed, here, is there a difference? Maybe not. And so this is why you also conclude that there is no need to go for unidentifiable goods or services. So this is what, in my view, this is what is missing. But I agree with Andrew and others to always caution that they have to first ask whether there is any price differential, and if there is price differential, whether there is any identifiable goods and services being provided. But in the specific fact pattern, there is no specific price differential because you have different fair values depending on the group of investors.
Scott?
Yeah, I agree with Laurent. Certainly the reason why I was in favor of the conclusion reflected in the agenda decision, paragraph 13A starts out, if the identifiable consideration received by the entity appears to be less than the fair value of the equity instruments, then go on and do other things. But it doesn't appear to be less than the fair value of the equity instruments. It appears to be just simply a result of negotiations with different potential investors. Some were willing to pay 100 and some were willing to pay 98. Okay. We can sell to different prices to different customers. That's all right.
Joanna, and then Andrew again, and then John.
So all I was going to suggest is a process issue on the basis that these two were against it in the first place, and I have absolutely no doubt about their drafting skills, that I think that someone else should be brought into the drafting as well.
Can I see if things are headed my way?
Since Scott has already volunteered to review IFRIC update, Andrew, which side were you on before?
Majority view.
All right.
I'm happy
to. So he's the third member of our 34 words or less drafting committee.
I just want to comment briefly on the two fair values arguments. I think that's difficult to get to. I can't get there under IFRS 13. I can get to an argument that having identified your principal and most advantageous market, which is one market or the other, the other transaction has a different price because it's not in the principal or most advantageous market, but I think for one instrument you only get to one fair value under IFRS 13.
I have been lectured at length by the fair value people that that is what 13 says. There is one and only one world without end on that. So, John?
I'm just come back to Scott's comment. I mean, that I think there's two reasons why we think that there's actually no expense here. The one that's in the agenda decision says the Interpretations Committee noted that the transactions analysed are outside the scope of IFRS 2 because the issuer of the shares is not obtaining goods or services from either shareholder group. What Scott explained was that it's outside the scope of IFRS 2 because there is no difference between the identifiable consideration and the fair value of the instrument. Those are two different arguments, and I would agree that if there's no difference in the identifiable consideration and the fair value, then you do not have a share-based payment. But the rationale that's in here is because the issuer is not obtaining goods or services from the shareholders.
That's the main reason that you can give to be outside the scope of IFRS 2.
You're outside the scope of IFRS, but how do you reconcile that with BC 18D, which says if there's a difference between the identifiable consideration and the fair value of the instrument, then there is unidentifiable goods or services. I don't know how we seem to be trying to identify whether there are unidentifiable goods or services to decide whether we're in the scope of IFRS 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't. I suppose it would be useful to clarify whether we believe we're outside the scope because of what Scott says, which is that there is no difference between the consideration and the fair value, or whether we believe we're outside the scope because the issuer of the shares is not obtaining goods or services. In other words, we haven't been able to identify the unidentifiable goods or services.
Charlotte?
I was going to support Lawrence and Scott. I think it's an issue that there isn't a difference in fair value. I think you can clearly have different markets and assets priced differently in different markets. Institutional markets are different to retail markets. And I think it's a fair assumption there's a different market. You can't actually even say that there's a discount here. You could equally argue there's a premium to fair value being paid by the institution investors.
Yeah, I think the way I would have skinned it would have been to say that these transactions happened at different times. So, you know, there was a definite sequence here that the institutional investors happened and then the market happened. So I would have skinned it that way, that fair value changed over time. But I don't want to get into that level of detail with this. Tony and Laurence, we're beating this to death.
We are. I just want to echo what Andrew said. I understand the notion there might be two markets and whatever, but I just think IFRS 13 says what it says. When it talks about principal market, most advantageous market, whatever it is, it says what it says.
Laurence?
Well, picking up on John's comment and for the drafting of the agenda rejection, I think he needs references to the two. It's a process thing. You start first to identify whether you have a differential in comparing the fair value with the price you pay. Here, if you conclude that there isn't, still you have to search that there isn't anything else that would cause you to revise your judgment. And so you look to to identifiable goods and services that would change your judgment. That's why I think it is important to mention the two aspects.
All right, you'll all have a chance to see this when it comes around in IFRIC update. So you'll all have a second shot at it. Luca, did you want to give the last word on this one, or are you happy?
I'm happy.
You're happy. Okay.
How's you got it?
All right. I think we're done. Anything else anybody else wants to raise? Okay. We will see you in January. In January, we're in our usual Tuesday, Wednesday. It's March. January, we're Wednesday, Thursday. Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Luca.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye. Luca
has left the conference.